Hi, Trevor Barone here, president of CAMP, Community Association Advisors for Management Professionals. Living in an association can come with many benefits like increased home value and shared costs, but it does come with challenges. Our volunteer board, advisors, and vendors service the community association industry throughout Central Florida, and we want to reduce the challenges managers, community association managers, licensed managers, face every day through access to tools, knowledge, and contacts who can get the job done right. Together, we can help raise the bar for our homeowners. Now, the primary way that we accomplish this is through our monthly events. Our March program was a really unique one. There is a lot of fear and misinformation when it comes to unmanned aerial systems or drones. And we took the opportunity to bring in an attorney, Sonia Bossinger, and an expert in the field of drone use with Mark Kramer from Eagle Hawk One. And they just put on a great course, a lot of great questions. So definitely check this out. If you have any more questions, send us an email. If you are a vendor or an advisor or a provider of courses, contact us. Or if you have an idea of courses you want provided for you as a manager or managers that are in your supervision, we'd love to hear it. So send us an email, campcontact@gmail.com. Once again, that's camp, C-A-A-M-P, contact@gmail.com. Without further ado, enjoy. Sonia from Arias Bossinger teaching us about drones. Well, really, that's going to be Mark a little bit as well. Eagle Hawk. I know a lot of you guys have become familiar to some degree with Eagle Hawk. Without further ado, Sonia Bossinger.
Thank you. All right. All right, well, thank you all for your patience during our technical difficulties. It is a technologically forward presentation, so of course we're going to have issues with the sail outside, and we made it. The screen is not broken, so we will survive another day. But I'm here today with Mark Kramer from Eagle Hawk One, and we're really excited to talk to you about drones and tying it into what you all do every single day, because drone use is becoming more and more prevalent. We have children like Trevor here who are flying their drones. But in all seriousness, kids get drones. I mean, we see them. It's like a hot Christmas item. People are getting them. And again, we don't bite. So there's six seats up here. If anybody wants to move up, we promise we will not fly the drone in your face. We promise. So if you want to come up. If not, that's okay. If you're scared of us, that's all right too. So where we're going to go over today is drone use. What are some liabilities that your associations may have with people flying drones over? What should your boards be doing? What should you be doing as a manager when it comes to drones? And we'll be going over that. And then Mark will also be inserting his knowledge, because Eagle Hawk is a company that uses drones within its technological purview for the services that they offer. So it's a cool perspective on what drones can do for your communities. And you know, he's going to interject as we go through the legal side of things and insert lots of informational tidbits that I wouldn't necessarily know. All right, so drone use. We're going to look at a couple examples. We're going to hope that I can get back to the PowerPoint if I go to YouTube. Cross your fingers. Here we go. All right, the first type, pretty incredible. So has anyone seen the movie Idiocracy? Maybe a decade old. Basically, the premise is we're getting dumber and dumber and dumber as generations go on, because we all sit on our couches and we order things and food just gets, you know, comes out of our televisions. So if two-day shipping wasn't enough, Amazon is going to deliver our dog treats within 30 minutes. And that's incredible. That's already happening in the UK in certain areas. But this is where the future is moving. So drones are becoming more and more prevalent in what we're doing on a daily basis. And here's for agriculture.
These are moving soundtracks with great positive messages about what drones can do and how it could shape mankind, and children are being fed and everyone's getting smarter and stronger. But in this forum right here, if I were to say the word drone, what are some of the terms? Be as candid as you want. What are some of the things that come to mind? What kind of words?
Annoying.
Annoying?
Spying.
Spying. I hear that a lot. Privacy. What else?
Property damage.
I think these are all very important terms to talk about as a family in here, because really when the condo community associations come together and drone technology is brought to them, I think the same. I think that that's what's going through their mind first. So I think it's important as we go through this presentation to be mindful of all that is auspicious and positive. But Sonia and I are also gonna bring, and not to, you know, bring down the room, but we're also gonna bring a lot of that staunch realism and the things of which to be most aware. As drone technology, it's inevitable, it's expanding, it's gonna be ubiquitous. I say this all the time. And we have to engage it the right way. So not everything is gonna have a moving soundtrack. There are, you know, gravity is going to act on these things, there are going to be accidents, but the more knowledge we can bring to you, the better equipped you will be to employ the right drone services and to know how to regulate drone users the right way. That's all I wanted to say.
Sure. Well, three more things I wanted to look at, and we'll look at them quickly. This is a long video, but we'll just look at it for a second. There is actually drone racing, so we're going to look at that for a second. And this goes on, and it's a $1 million prize. I thought this was really cool how this racetrack looks. But they also use drones during like NASCAR, those types of races too, to be able to fly over the vehicles to see what's going on. But this is really cool because it's actual drone racing. And this is something that, you know, started as something that helps us and something people have recreationally really gone haywire. I mean, $1 million prizes for racing a piece of plastic and metal, I mean, to me is crazy, but well, yeah. Not to Mark and the other drone lovers. To me, it's, you know, I don't use it for those purposes, so it seems a little bit odd. And then the other thing I wanted to look at is in the construction industry. And the last thing we're going to look at is for entertainment purposes. And this is really cool. Intel, the company, put on this drone light show this year in January. It's pretty incredible. They coordinated the drones with lights on them to go with the fountain that's in Las Vegas. I think it's
at the Bellagio.
Yeah. All right. So, what are the benefits to drone use? Well, obviously, we saw it's cheaper. You can cut down your labor force, like those farmers did. It's faster. You can do things faster. Amazon's delivery in 30 minutes. I mean, whether we're going to get to that point in the United States, I don't know. Obviously, that was somewhere in the middle of farm country in England, but we're moving there. We're moving in that direction. Safer, and I'm going to put a little asterisk there. Is it safer? As an association, what do we have to think about with deliveries? Do we have FedEx coming at 7 p.m.? What if that FedEx delivery was actually through a drone? Do you need rules to talk about when you're allowed to have that drone dropping off packages? Where are they dropping it off? On your common elements? On the person's balconies? Is that drone going to run into the balcony because the drone operator doesn't stop it in time or they don't see something? I mean, is it safer? I think in certain respects it is, but there's a lot of safety concerns with associations that we're gonna talk about here today. Reaching places. Some of what we're going to look at is that these drones can really see things that as a human eye, we can't see from the angle that they're able to reach. The gentleman, the really enlightened interviewee, when he was talking about topography, something that they could have seen early on with a drone, they didn't, and now they're having to deal with that issue later on, because if they had just looked high above from a bird's view, so to speak, they could have seen a lot of things and combated a lot of problems that happen later on. What are some of our legal obstacles? Well, of course, we have the FAA regulations, local regulations. Some of the towns and cities are actually creating ordinances regarding drone use. The Florida privacy laws, liability concerns, technology issues, organizational challenges. That's what we're going to look at today. So the general FAA regulations, the FAA defines an unmanned aircraft system. The UAS that you'll see throughout this presentation is an unmanned aircraft system. It's something that's going to require registration with them if that aircraft is 55 to 65 pounds and over 13 years old. It's going to require that registration. There's two types of regulations that we're going to be looking at. The recreational use for someone using it, such as Trevor, you know, videotaping his friends' weddings as an example, something he's doing on the side. Commercial. Well, what if you're a realtor and you want to use your drone to start capturing your properties and, you know, promoting them that way online and showing those videos? Is that commercial use? We're going to look at Section 333 and Part 107, and those are both under federal laws.
Just a quick interjection, if I may. It's my personal belief, this isn't anything that is evidenced or fact, but it's my personal belief that the technology in this space, as well as in a great many spaces, and I can talk about Amazon Echo as one of those examples, is outpacing legality. So what I'm bringing up in this measure is we're going to have to be patient, because I think there's going to be a lot of iterations between how the laws are written, how the regulations are written, and then coupled with how the technology is expanding, and they're going to have to take some time to get it right. But right now, I think there are a lot of regulations and a lot of laws that are trying to catch up, and they're covering a broad, broad range of topics, which over time may be pared down and measured down to simpler laws. But I think we're going to see in your industry a great many back and forths, before which time we actually have gotten it right, because of how quickly drone technology is moving forward.
Right. So Section 333 requires that pilots are the ones to be operating those drones. You must show granting exemption is in a public exception. So that means you may have to get public exceptions if you want to fly the drone somewhere in public. So if you want to go downtown Orlando and fly a drone, you're going to actually need an exemption to be able to fly it there under certain circumstances. You have to specify the type of aircraft and regulations from which exemption is requested. So some of the exemptions are flying at night. Maybe you want to fly at night because you're videotaping your friend's wedding. You are a pilot and you're doing it recreationally. So there's some gray area there on, are you doing it recreationally because you're not planning on selling that video? Or are you planning on selling it and now it goes to the side of being in a commercial activity where you may actually need to be licensed under the FAA guidelines? And again, what Mark said is so true. This area is so developing that, like we said in the beginning, kids have drones. They're obviously, for the most part, going to be using it for a recreational purpose. But then those kids that are learning to fly them at age 7, 8, 9, 10, all of a sudden are now using them for a commercial process. Maybe they're going to start filming the weddings. Maybe they're going to start videotaping things for their friends that all of a sudden turns it into that commercial purpose where all of a sudden they need to be careful so they're not getting in trouble from the FAA. But at the same time, where do those regulations begin? At what point do we cross the line from recreational to commercial? It's pretty hazy right now. So some of the limitations under Section 3.3, you have to have less than 87 knots, 100 miles per hour, that your drone can fly. That's pretty fast. 100 miles per hour, one of those things coming at you, I mean, it's daunting. That's a pretty large drone. I mean, even those little small, like, bug-looking ones coming at your face, even 99 miles per hour is quite scary.
Happy 99 miles per hour? Yeah, no.
You have to actually petition for amendments. And a lot of this, we're not going to go over the nuances. If you really want to learn what it takes to be licensed as a drone pilot, please, there's courses that'll help you with that. Our job today is really not to get into the weeds on what exceptions are and the limitations, but to give you an overview of what this process looks like so you can start to kind of have an overview of it when you're looking at it for your associations. You also have to follow the manufacturer's maintenance guidelines. No operation at night unless you're authorized. This is where you might be getting an exemption. No operation within 5 nautical miles of an airport unless a letter of agreement with that airport management is obtained. You must return to the predetermined location. Must have 5 minutes of reserve power in the battery. That makes sense, right? Because what happens with those drones when they run out of power? They just come down. They don't, you know, I'll let Mark talk about that.
Hopefully, most of your commercial operators will be flying sophisticated enough equipment such that when there is a certain amount of battery life reached, it'll go back to what's called the home position before it goes 9.8 meters per second squared down on somebody. That's a good thing, but...
But the Toys R Us model, may Toys R Us rest in peace, by the way. The Toys R Us model, on the other hand, when it's out of battery life, it's going straight down, whether that be on someone's head, on, you know, your vehicle, on your condo common elements. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen. The exemptions, you need an airworthiness certificate. You have to keep a copy of a manual in the aircraft. These are exemptions because obviously we cannot be keeping a copy of the manual in one of those drones. And that's a decent sized drone, but sometimes there's itty bitty ones as well. So there's obviously exemptions from some of the FAA regulations that are required. The pilot must be 16 years of age or older. You must pass a knowledge test and must have a TSA background check. As you can see, this is serious. This is not something just your 10-year-old nephew can, you know, do. He needs, you know, there's requirements here. The aircraft must be less than 55 pounds under the Part 107. It requires a license, and you may pass the unmanned aircraft out of view only temporarily. So for the most part, you should be able to see where that unmanned aircraft is flying. Also under the 107, no nighttime flight unless you've been given permission. Again, maximum speed of 100 miles an hour, not under a covered structure, not inside a covered stationary vehicle, but you can request waivers for all of these items.
Quick question, and this actually is directed to the lawyers in the room. The FAA will give you a license. You'll have a physical thing. If you are a resident or a homeowner and you see someone flying a drone on the beach or other, and they're doing it for ostensibly commercial purposes, are they and are we legally allowed to go up to someone and say, "Hi, I see you're flying this drone. May I see your FAA license?" Are we allowed to do that?
I think that you would be. I don't think we can enforce it if they say no. I mean, I don't have the FAA on speed dial, so who would I be calling?
Citizen's arrest.
Right.
I guess so, but I think I bring it up because, yes, right. Indeed, you probably can't, but you can. This is something that I think people should do. I know Roger would be fantastic at
the drone police.
Yeah, if I had a license, I'd say only to my 357.
And that would, you'd get a salute and they would probably exit stage right. But I think it's important to know that we should be doing that if we have an inkling that something is going wrong. Because if that person can't evidence it back to you, yeah, granted, you might not be able to take them down like Roger could with jiu-jitsu or something, but you probably could call the proper entity to make sure they're aware. And I'm telling you right now, it's a laughing situation, but in 2 years' time, that is going to be, in my prediction, very, very important that we do.
Law enforcement can respond to those calls.
Yes,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, because that, it goes into privacy, it goes into the local authority, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just like any operation, they'd have to carry a license and produce it upon request.
Absolutely.
As to the privacy issue, apparently at the current time, the status of the law is you don't have a privacy interest if you're at a public place, such as a park, or you're at the beach and a drone flies overhead. They can videotape everything you did and broadcast it on YouTube. You have no cause of action at all.
However, if you do have an expectation of privacy, and we'll talk about that in a second, the new statute that went into effect in 2015, you actually can, and law enforcement can go after, if you have an expectation of privacy, which means you're in your condominium unit and all of a sudden a drone is filming you taking a shower. You have an expectation of privacy there because from the street, from the road, wherever someone is standing, they would not be able to see you. It's not. They would not have been able to see you but for the drone being able to fly there.
That could go into all kinds of issues because of age requirement. If they're in a public place and you're with a family, you have underage children, you can go into a lot of avenues. I mean, in your profession, there's a lot of avenues for that one.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So local regulations, there are currently 45 cities in the United States that have regulations regarding drone use, and that's in 20 states. The National Park System actually has regulations for flying drones within the national parks. And the Florida cities right now with drone regulations are Orlando, Bonita Springs, and Miami. The Orlando ordinance, go ahead.
That is a moving target.
It is, absolutely.
For people that are involved in
drones as their business, that becomes a very difficult thing to understand what the rules are in a particular locality. So through our work advocating for the businesses of drones through AEBSI in Tallahassee, last year a law was passed that the state is going to govern drones, okay, and the local municipalities cannot. So I know of the three cities that you had listed there, mm-hmm. Orlando pulled theirs back as a result of that.
Yeah.
So we had people testifying in Orlando against this at the city council. They pulled that back, they passed it, but they pulled it back when the state legislature in Tallahassee passed that. But that's not all the case for all of the states, and our association, AEBSI, tracks what's going on in all 50 states. So if anybody's got any particular questions, you know, just let me know, see me after.
But also real-time example of how this iterative push and pull before it gets right is going to happen rampantly.
And this is what was in the nuts and bolts of the Orlando ordinance. And what I really see happening is the nuts and bolts of this is going into the state level for the state of Florida, because a lot of what's in the Orlando ordinance makes sense for why it was put in there. For example, prohibits a person without a permit from launching, landing, operating, or assisting in operation of an unmanned aircraft on city property at or within 500 feet of any venue. So that's going to take out that commercial use where someone's going to be flying it to take pictures of the Amway Center, for example, to use it for a commercial purpose. Unless, again, they're going to get those exceptions. At or within 500 feet of any outdoor public assembly, at or within 500 feet of an event with more than 1,000 people, and at or within 500 feet of any county or municipal detention facility. Which makes a lot of sense. You dropping a shank over to a prisoner over the fence, I mean, it seems silly, but it could possibly happen. It also prohibits the operation of a drone in an unsafe manner. That makes sense. If you're under the influence, also makes sense. Because again, remember, someone is flying these unmanned aircraft. Some of them are, you know, automatized so that it's done from the background, not someone that's right there doing it. But still, it's being done, or they're being programmed to fly in a certain manner and then come back to a specific spot. You also can't fly a drone that's weaponized. Also makes a lot of sense. Prohibits assisting in unsafe activity and requires the operator to remain at the scene of the accident. If you do damage property or someone, you have to stay there. You can't just run off. Prohibits secret observation when a person is in a dwelling, structure, or conveyance, and such location provides a reasonable expectation of privacy. Go ahead.
If you have to always have line of sight to know where the accident is to get over there. Is that correct?
You don't always have to have line of sight.
But how do you know there's an accident? You have to be there.
You may not know. Under the Part 107, you have to have line of sight for the most part, but you can have a temporary lack of that line of sight. So there are instances where you're just not going to have a line of sight, so it might be after the fact. But this was all under the Orlando ordinance, which I agree with you. I think there's going to be instances where damage occurs, people are hurt, and you don't even realize that that's transpired.
The only good news, if I may, is that even the most nefarious of entities, you would think they'd hide behind a bush or hide behind a structure, fly their drone, do their terrible business, and be able to execute that. It behooves the pilot to remain within a line of sight of his or her drone. So you can't just run away, fly a program, and expect your drone to carry out the mission, so to say. So right now, with the technology where it is today, the pilot almost every time needs to have a line of sight with the drone. But here's the caveat. With a drone like this, especially on the coast, I could possibly be as much as maybe 5 miles away.
Yeah, you got the video screen.
You got the video screen, and you have big sky country on the coast. So you can maintain line of sight with your drone very, very far away while still controlling your drone, which makes it very, very difficult to find out who is the pilot sometimes, if you're just the casual policer.
What about VR with that? Because you're basically your line of sight in your helmet.
I got to be honest with you, and maybe John could feel this question, but virtual reality. I've never had experience with that.
First person view,
yes.
That's a good question. You see that with the racing, okay? That is only for private pleasure use for hobbyists,
mm-hmm.
okay? You can't do that professionally. In most cases where you show the races, that's at a sanctioned event, so there are observers making sure the public is safe.
and it's going to stay within a certain area.
If you have a visual observer, you can have an enclosed system like that.
That's what I'm saying. But somebody has to look out for and make sure all the rules that apply to manned aviation apply to the UAVs. VRs, they have to have due regard. They have to be able to see and avoid of other aircraft.
But what I think is important for us, because I think drone technology, like I said, we could boil the ocean. As it pertains to condo associations and condo dwellers, one way to mitigate all of this is to make a relationship happen with your pilots and your groups that are going to be flying your complexes. Make sure you know who they are, who the pilot is. That's going to control 99.999% of all risk to you relative to this specific issue, because like I said, it's expanding infinitely and rapidly. But for condo associations, relationships are going to bridge that gap wonderfully.
And the other two items that were big from the Orlando ordinance was requiring proof of insurance as a condition for a permit. Also makes sense that if you do cause damage and then they find out after the fact, at least there would be that insurance that that person has. And violations punishable with imprisonment, fines, and seizure of your drone. So this was the statute we were talking about a couple minutes ago that passed in 2015. It's the Freedom from Unwanted Surveillance Act, and it limits the use of drones by governmental and private entities, and the act prohibits operating a drone with a camera to record privately owned real property or the occupant of that property in violation of that person's reasonable expectation of privacy. If a person cannot be seen on a property by anyone at ground level, a reasonable expectation of privacy exists. Like we talked about showering, you expect that no one can see you. But if that drone's flying up, all of a sudden you do have that reasonable expectation of privacy, and that drone operator may actually be violating this particular act in the Florida statutes. Now, there are some exceptions. So, like I said, this act is actually used to prohibit government activity as well as private entities using drones. So, the government with law enforcement must first obtain a search warrant signed by a judge authorizing the use of a drone in order for them to use the drone to actually capture some footage that they're going to be using to be able to arrest someone on a specific crime. It also can be used by a person or an entity engaged in a business or profession licensed by the state, which this is an interesting one because I've actually been hearing about CAMs in the state of Florida who are using drones and offering to use their drone to do inspections of the property. So for example, Mr. Smith's failed to mow his lawn, and now they're using a drone to look over to see how the backyard looks as well. And as attorneys, Jay's laughing, that gives us the eebie-jeebies, because before, if that was a homeowners association and that fence goes around that lot, we've never been able to view what's behind that fence before, but now we can. Are we going too far in our enforcement? Now, some of the drone use might be positive. For example, maybe having an overview of the property, looking for damage that occurred after a storm, that the manager can use it. But this is starting to become pretty popular, especially down in South Florida. So this is something I expect for us as attorneys to start seeing on a regular basis. Go ahead,
Jim. That'd be viewed as a trespass. Like, as you know, if it's a lot, you own up to the
right
sky and down under the earth.
Yeah.
Whereas in condos, everybody owns in a common, so it may be a different distinction, but do you see a trespass action?
Possibly, and I think it's going to depend on the wording in the documents. If the association has the right to enter on any lot for inspection, we have that right according to the documents already to enter on the lot. Are we going too far by using the drone to enter on the lot? I'm interested to see how this is going to go. It's going to get litigated. We'll be dealing with it, Jay, I'm sure. We will be.
Get to the point, though, where the reason for that is to protect property values, then it seems like a losing endeavor for the association when you say, well, if we're trying to protect property values by requiring everyone's lawn to be cut, how is that protecting property values if someone's lawn is overgrown in their backyard, which is enclosed by a fence? It just doesn't seem like a winner.
I think if you can go on, you can go over. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
But if you don't have a right of access, because not every HOA document
Correct.
Gives it to you, I think you can't go on, then you can't go over.
I agree.
There's also a limit to the air rights. It's not.
I'm glad you said that. Yeah. Right. It's not an infinite column
right.
above your property.
I don't even think it's 400 feet.
No. Yeah. It's sad. I have my real estate license and I cannot remember.
The yard that's fenced in that you can't see from walking around the property, but they're sunbathing. And now you fly a drone.
How are they sunbathing?
They have a reasonable expectation of privacy if you exactly. couldn't see them. Yeah. And all of a sudden now you violated this.
That you will be flying the drone at a particular
time to notice.
That means focus.
Yeah, I agree.
The loopholes are numerous.
Yeah. But this is
that. It's going to be interesting in the state legislature.
Yeah. I think so too. But this is out there. So for you CAMs that, you know, may have a drone, dabble with drones, thinking about putting this into the purview of your services, think hard about it. I think there's value here that could be added for an association, but I think there's a lot of pits that you can really fall into because of where this is going, where the law is continuing to change, I mean, almost on a monthly basis. We're going to be seeing a lot of cases come out of this, and we haven't seen any really come out of Florida yet. So it'll be interesting. Go ahead.
What we are trying to do in the drone industry is to just make it simple. All of the things that people are postulating that you can do bad things with drones, there are already laws against it. So for example, when it comes to privacy, there should be no difference between a camera that's mounted on a drone and a camera that's a high-powered camera that somebody's got a perch looking into your property, or somebody that has a selfie stick going over a fence, and that kind of stuff. There was one law, one bill proposed, I think it was 2 years ago, having to do with drone use by pedophiles. Well, that got locked up in committee because we've got all the laws that we have need on the books to protect the public for that. So this is just a new technology. You know, Mark's got it absolutely right. We're kind of wrestling with how do we bring this new technology into our everyday lives to protect us, but without having the unintended negative consequences of prohibiting the safe and the beneficial uses of the drones. So
right.
it's going to be interesting to watch for those of you that like this kind of stuff. Yeah, it's in my blood, so I've been doing it for 18 years. So we'll continue.
Right. So go ahead.
I don't know if anybody else has this, but as a manager, where do we stand as far as if somebody that's an owner or a resident decides to go out to the common elements of the quarry and fly their drone? You know?
Are they licensed?
if it's recreational, they don't have to be licensed.
Right.
And I got a lot of teenagers right now that's flying these things in the tennis courts or the pool area, or they're flying it out of the riverside.
Wouldn't that depend how close they are to a building and which way the drone is facing?
Right. And we'll get into that in a couple minutes, Lynn, to answer your question. One of the other exceptions to the statute is the property appraiser. The property appraiser is welcome to use their drones to fly over your property and film whatever they want for the purposes of valuation of your property for taxes. So they're not looking for sunbathers, but they might accidentally get a sunbather or two when they're doing that. Also, the utility companies, electric, water, etc., they can also use the drones. Aerial mapping, there's quite a few exceptions in the statute for those operators that can use these drones for and actually overcome that reasonable expectation of privacy if they're doing it based on their job and they're licensed in the state or they're one of these other exceptions, which is where the CAMs that are using these drones for their services as a CAM, they're using this statute as an exception for themselves because of the fact that they're licensed by the state of Florida. And that's one of the exceptions in the statute. So there's violations here. You can actually be liable for punitive damages. So if someone does catch you sunbathing, then all of a sudden you may be able to get punitive damages against them, which as you all may read in the newspaper, punitive damages most of the time farly outweigh what the actual damages are. So maybe your actual damages were $100, but they owe you $14 million in punitive damages because you have hurt and suffering and those sorts of things. So that's all allowed under this statute. And it's prohibition on the use of evidence. If it's collected in violation of this act, it's not admissible. So the law enforcement officers have to be abiding by this act and get that warrant from a judge. Technology issues, maintenance. And I don't know that much about maintenance, but Mark, I'd love to turn it over to you if you want to talk about what does it take to maintain the drone?
Well, to be honest, a lot of the technology in a drone is solid state. There's not a lot of routine maintenance. It's not like a car where you can, you know, change some oils, look at some bearings. I mean, there are bearings in these things. There are magnets. There's a lot of solid state electronics. But maintenance of a drone is actually also evolving. So how does a user maintain his or her own drone? But my statement in summary is the companies that supply drones of commercial level, like a DJI, these are the companies that usually have written the book on how the drone is to be maintained. Not a lot of user servicing that can be done. Batteries can go in and out. Batteries certainly can go in and out. You can buy components. I bet you Trevor could actually expound upon this a little bit, but we're not there yet with a lot of what the user can do legally to his or her own drone.
All right, and then communication links when the drone happens to just keep flying away. That does happen. Have you ever seen that happen, Mark?
Not with the commercial grade drones. And I've only not seen, but I've read about instances where I'll call them toy drones have flown away. John, do you wish to expand upon this in any way, if I could turn it over to you for that?
As far as what?
Flyaways, when the drone just keeps going.
Typically, it'll be the hobbyists that really don't know what they're doing if they lose track of it.
Right.
But there's also more sophisticated software now that DJI is putting into some of their drones with fencing. There's some prohibited areas where you can't fly into. Okay, so if you get into those kinds of areas, you're not going to be able to fly, so the drone will come back to where it is. And then the other part that, I don't know if you have this later on in your brief, but all of these systems require communications frequencies. All right, so just picture all of these drones flying right now trying to talk on frequencies in a fairly narrow band. If the drone starts feeling like it is being jammed because there's so much interference and it loses its signal, it's going to go back to its home base. Right. So again, that's why you've got to take the FAA exam. Even if you qualify under one of those items under the state law, you still have to have your Part 107 to fly so that you know as an airman what to do when those things happen with your aircraft.
Right. What about the product life cycle? How long does a drone typically last?
It's so difficult for me personally to say because every drone we've ever had as a company, Eagle Hawk, is still in service today. But the types of drone we employ are, you know, maximum 3-4 years old. So we never fly and have never flown a drone over 4 years old.
Okay. All right, limiting liability, risk management. Talking about your insurance. As a drone owner, you're going to want to make sure that you have insurance. Like the Orlando ordinance, it required that you provide proof of insurance before you're able to get a permit to fly it in the city of Orlando. But these are the types of things we want to be looking at as an association. If you're going to have someone come over and fly over your property for whether it's using Mark services to because you had damage from a hurricane or some other purpose, the first thing you want to know is, do you have insurance? List the association as an additional insured or provide proof of that insurance so that the association has proof of it. If there is damage, that you know where you're filing that claim.
And I would say with the companies with which we've done business here, I think Sentry has a standard form where we have to submit insurance. And Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, I think Keys has already done that. But I think it's easy to get in under the radar because it's this new burgeoning technology of a drone-initiated service. So I think it's just important, yeah. Register, get everyone's insurance if you're going to be employing a drone provider, just as you would any other company, because it's just as critical.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's a company coming in to do it. But let's talk about people within your community flying their own drone. Maybe the kid that's flying his Toys R Us drone over the association's property. Does it make sense for your board to completely prohibit drone use? Probably not. But for some associations, it does make sense. Maybe they're right on the ocean and they're really tired of kids flying their drones in and out of the balconies on the condominium, and they want to be able to have a way to enforce it. Now, that's just a way. It's a difficult enforcement process because all of a sudden, who are we going after? Do we know who owns that drone? Is it a minor? And now are we going after the parents? I mean, there's difficult things here that we really need to look at with enforcement, but I think an all-out prohibition is likely not a good answer, or at least if you're going to prohibit, you're doing the prohibition in the association's board-adopted rules versus creating an amendment to the declaration where all of a sudden, if the state of Florida now comes down with all these laws regulating drones, our association is stuck with needing to update its declarations to comply with what's in the Florida statute now, if it didn't already incorporate amendments to the statute.
We have, because of your flight and use it, and believe me, I see a drone as options and beneficial, but with his flight, it brought the association would end up on your desk. They're adopting rules and regulations to oversee the upcoming uses. So, you and I'll talk about how often they'll be able to update them, but that's one thing that you sparked on the flights.
What did we do?
That you brought it up to the board.
Oh, brought it up to the board. Okay, good.
Because they're saying we have nothing in our rules and regulations for owners, et cetera, to be doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And for some associations, drone use is really common, especially being on the beach. I mean, you might have a lot of weddings that occur right on your association part of the property, right on the beach, next to the beach there. So, having drone regulations makes sense. Where are those drones allowed to be? Where are they allowed to land? Are you going to allow them to land on the condo association's common elements or a homeowners association's common area? Does that make sense for you? Does the association's general liability policy cover should that drone cause any damage because now it's landing on association property? I mean, those are the types of things that you really need to think about, and it's kind of, it can be a bit overwhelming because, will this actually occur? Will there be any damage? Probably not if you're using a reputable company, but I mean, we live in Florida, we're by the beach, there's wind. I mean, things happen. These are aircrafts. I mean, things can happen. A big gust of wind can come through. So these are the things that we really need to be looking at.
A question, if
I may.
Go ahead.
And maybe Trevor could help with this too. Is there a default condition in a hit and run? So it took a long time for there to be uninsured motorist insurance. So you have this uninsured entity that unfortunately flew their drone into your complex and just ran. No way to enforce it, no way on earth to figure out who that was that flew it. Whose purview, whose insurance, how does that work from an insurance standpoint, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, most policies, most every policy, wherever you look, personal, commercial, is gonna have an aircraft exclusion. In most of these items, most of these items are gonna fall under that aircraft exclusion right now. A baseball is much more dangerous than 99% of drones, especially Toys R Us drones. And tennis balls and golf balls, and you're not going out. These kids are playing sports, So people can get hurt. Now, if somebody is hurt on the property and it's not by a business, is there going to be a bodily injury type claim if it's a worker or an employee? It could fall under workers' comp, yes. Could there be a general liability issue? Possibly. There's just so...
Gotcha. There's no simple answer, yeah.
Actually happened. And the insurance market is notoriously slow, too. So the products that are available for actual drone users can be prohibitively expensive. There are new products where you can buy it for the day that you're using it in a certain area, and it makes sense. The insurance market as a whole is not really caught up. And a lot of it is because there's just not a lot of cases. There's not real injuries. There's not, you gotta really hit somebody in the face perfectly to cause a significant amount of damage. And unless you're flying on a higher end, heavier end type stuff.
And I'm gonna come back to the board policies in a second. I do wanna talk about some examples of what has happened, and I'm not trying to poo-poo drones at all. That's not my point. I just was trying to find real-life examples of where people did get injured, and there haven't been any cases yet in Florida. So where, the Florida law is going, we haven't had those real-life examples yet.
But Miami,
Yes, exactly. The Wild West in Miami. There will be a case really quickly, I'm sure. Violating FAA regulations. It was a roofing company hired to fix a leak in a residential roof. They have a drone and fly it in compliance with the Part 107 regulations, and they decide to try and use the infrared camera mounted on the drone to locate the moisture. The operators were required to keep their license and registration on them. So what happened? They didn't have their license and registration on them. So no big deal, but they got in trouble from the FAA for failing to do that. They also were required to keep their license and registration and provide it to law enforcement officers. And this goes to your comment, Rick, earlier, that you are required to provide it to law enforcement if they ask for it. Now, the end-all entity that has enforcement is the FAA, but the law enforcement officer can request a copy to review your license and registration. You also need to present a required certificate of waiver or authorization. They were trying to do it at a time of day that they didn't have the waiver and they were required to have that. Here's when a person was hired to shoot footage for a college commencement ceremony. The FAA alleged the drone was operated recklessly, it was not registered, and violated other regulations designed for manned aircraft. They were fined $5,000. And this was just a college that hired some photographer who was not licensed to do it because they probably didn't realize someone who's just taking video of their graduation ceremony needed to be licensed. But because they were getting paid, it's now on the side of commercial, they were required to be licensed and they were actually fined $5,000. There is a mechanical failure. Drone was flying over people. The FAA said it was careless and reckless operation. And under Florida's dangerous instrumentality doctrine, the owner or lessor of an aircraft is vicariously liable for the negligent conduct of a pilot. So this is important, and I included that because if this case had happened in Florida, and what happened in this case was that the person who was operating the aircraft was not the owner of the aircraft. So in that particular state, I forget what state, it was like Louisiana or something like that, they weren't held liable because there wasn't a similar statute there in Louisiana. But in Florida, that person who owned the aircraft would have still been vicariously liable for the actions of the pilot. Here's a hotel inspecting its building with a drone, hired a licensed professional to perform the inspection. And this is where the Freedom for Unwarranted Surveillance Act in Florida has not been tested yet, but the owner, and this was in Kentucky, shot down someone's drone flying over his home. So it hasn't been tested in Florida, but in Kentucky, this drone flew over and he shot it down because, you know, it was hunting season or something. And there were criminal charges brought against the owner of the home who shot down the drone for shooting down the drone, but the court in Kentucky actually dismissed them and said he had a reasonable expectation of privacy. You're not able to fly a drone over his home.
And probably only because they recruited him as a skilled marksman. Because had he shot down a helicopter, I would have given him credit as a skilled marksman, let alone a drone. Yep. That's amazing.
So we'll see what happens in Florida. I'm sure we will have some cases maybe next year around this time, but we'll see. But Florida has some interesting laws that had we used the Florida laws, maybe these cases would have been decided differently. So talking about the board policies, if your boards want to adopt policies for regulating drones on the common element usage or, you know, around on the association property, but not necessarily within the units, who's allowed to operate them? Are you going to require a consent where they're agreeing to possibly hold the association harmless should they cause any damage to the association's common elements? That may be something that the association wants to consider. What about if you're going to have a company like Mark's coming in? What about scheduling? You want to make sure that your owners are aware that a drone will be flying over, so maybe don't, you know, go on your balcony without clothing on Tuesday, you know, might be a good idea. I mean, those sorts of things are what we need to keep in mind when we're talking about drones because of the reasonable expectation of privacy, that making sure when you are going to schedule these flyovers for whatever reason, that that's noticed and scheduled to your owners. How about board policies as to the place? Okay, maybe you want to prohibit drone use altogether on your association's property. Some associations feel strongly about that. They just don't want their owners to feel, you know, insecure about someone flying those drones over. That's okay too, but again, putting that in your board policies is better than amending it into your declaration, because that may have to be changed based on where the statutes are going in Florida.
Sonia?
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me play devil's advocate with where, why it should maybe not be in a rule. There's a reasonableness test.
Sure.
If you're gonna say absolutely not, is it reasonable to be absolutely not? Whereas in the declaration, it doesn't really matter really pretty much at all. And then, if you're going to require indemnification, you cannot do that by rule. That's, in fact, there's a question whether you can impose it even by an amendment for those who didn't consent, because indemnification has to be signed by the person giving it. So how do you feel where maybe the deck should be the place to go, but maybe create a easier standard of amending those sections and having to get the full percentage? What's your thoughts of board rule versus covenant?
I think that you can, we can do a lot of things where we ask someone to indemnify the association. Whether we can actually go to court and enforce and force them to actually sign that indemnification, I agree with you. I think in a rule we wouldn't be able to push it to that level, but I think actually having a voluntary, here, if you're going to fly a drone, the board rules require you to sign this indemnification, I think you would be able to get people to voluntarily sign it to at least give the association that ability to say, okay, we had them sign it. But I agree with you, I think the enforceability of forcing someone, it's going to be tough to try to enforce it through a rule, but at least it's out there, and most owners, you know, are either not going to fly drones altogether, or they're just going to, you know, fly them anyways, and then the board has to decide, do we have something in the declaration that allows us to create those rules in the first place? If the board has the ability to adopt rules regarding use and what's done on the common elements, then I think they can adopt rules. But I agree with you with the indemnification. I think we ask for it, and then if we can't get it, that might be as far as we take it.
Now, the minimum age 16 is commercial, correct?
Correct.
So if you're saying a minimum age for flying in the community, is that a fair housing issue in a non-55 plus community? Because this is an activity, recreational, that more children do than adults. And child targeting activities are a big thing for fair housing. Do you think that's gonna ever be an issue?
Of course it could be, because fair housing will take any case. I mean, truly, you know they will, because they don't get paid to do what they do, and they like making our association's lives hell. Right. But so can they do it? Absolutely.
But do you think there's a risk there?
I think there could be. I do think it is a child activity, but at the same time, I think there's a lot of adults that get into drone use.
No, I think if you looked at the pie chart of usage, I think it would actually be swayed toward 18 and up. Okay. I honestly do.
Well, that's helpful.
But wouldn't a reasonable expectation in the associations, they have a right to reasonable expectations?
It's a balancing test. Yeah, I think it's absolutely a balancing test.
So I had 2 points. One on Jay's, that it seems like it would be, it's so easy to tie prohibitions of drone use to any anti-nuisance provision, which is virtually in every declaration.
Yeah.
Because I don't know of anybody that's not uncomfortable with a drone flying over them. And two, I thought, I went to a drone presentation a long time ago, and I thought for recreational use, there's a prohibition against allowing a drone to fly over a human being. And I could be wrong on that, but I distinctly recall that. And going out on the beach, I'm like, these drones are violating this right and left. And it got me thinking of that. Mm-hmm. I would never recommend an association to allow drone use on the association property. It's just opening a can of pain in the neck.
Well, don't forget, under the Florida statute, the one we talked about, it's only if you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy. If you're laying on the beach, you do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy, and someone can absolutely fly a drone over you.
Directly over your head.
I'm talking directly over your head. I think that's against, again, I couldn't eat it. It's under federal law.
So many ways to get around it.
Yeah, who's going to force that?
That's the problem.
Well, if we have documentation that it's flying over someone's head, I don't see how someone could refuse to enforce that.
It's always the gun.
Do you like
don't
the
shoot the aircraft because it is an aircraft.
Get to
yeah.
back
By the way, a pedophile can fly a drone at the beach, videotape little kids, and not get charged with them.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Are there any other questions on that?
I still think there's a lot of fear and misinformation about this stuff.
Right.
Not me.
So,
oh,
a baseball is more dangerous still than most drones. And if kids are playing baseball, you're going to probably keep an eye on them. But, and this is more powerful of a camera than 99% of drones you're going to see. And everybody has one of these in their pocket. So,
But it doesn't go over your head.
So that makes you nervous. But that doesn't mean that's going to see inside your window. So I think the importance of this presentation, or part of it, is understanding some of the limitations,
right,
but also looking ahead of how to protect the association. When you talk about property damage, I talk about property damage all day, but property damage from 99% of drones,
mm-hmm,
is a drone, as hard as you could try, is not going to damage most of these buildings.
But all I have to do is find somebody who says, this is disturbing my right to the private enjoyment and use of my property and the common elements.
But you're going to get in trouble if you go after somebody, because what I'm saying is, you're not.
A lot of people.
And organizations like AUVSI are going to protect the people that you may try to sue properly because you don't understand how these drones operate.
Not necessarily. What we try to do, and it all gets down to the point of sale, okay, and people acting responsibly.
Mm-hmm.
The FAA,
absolutely,
in conjunction with the Academy for Model Aeronautics, they're the ones that govern all the model aircraft guys, and AVSI put together a nice know before you fly thing that we pushed real hard to get to the point of sale, such as anybody that buys a drone gets one of these things, and you're supposed to read it before you put the batteries in and start flying. But people don't do that, okay? So, yeah, exactly.
So I'm talking about an easy solution. People who don't want drones by condos or HOAs, live in one that's put within 5 miles of an airport.
There you go.
You won't have that issue.
Unless they've gotten a waiver for something.
Right, no, indeed.
You
can get a waiver.
Well, the commercial ones,
we have.
The residential,
right.
The private ones can.
Right.
So that just eliminates all the small drone flights.
Put a little
air
on
the
So I think Trevor's point is important. We're not here to scare you about drones. We're actually here to educate you on how it works. But also, if your association is going to use a company that works with drones, making sure they know what they're doing. You're not hiring some high schooler to come and, you know, videotape what's happening with your building. You're not going to get much from that information. You're going to need to work with someone that can actually interpret that data that you're actually being presented. I mean, the cameras that his company is going to be using has infrared technology. They're looking for heat, water intrusion. Those sorts of things are completely different than what the Toys R Us model is going to be doing. And they're not, you know, videotaping in to see inside the units. They're looking at exterior damage, roof damage, etc., when they're doing their job. So I think there is an important distinction, but, you know, globally we have to understand how drones actually fit into the picture and where they're going in the future of what's happening in our economy. I mean, they're really starting to become more of a prevalent thing that we're going to see day by day. I think what you were saying earlier, going to the beach and asking someone if they're licensed, is going to become more prevalent because, you know, more and more people are going to have their drones with them when they're going to the beach, when they're going places, because it really is becoming such a popular sport as well as for commercial activities. What we're seeing is increase in crop yield. So, you know, back to the farming, that's where what we're going to see is these drones being used and kind of dying out our type of farmer. I mean, a lot of what the drones can use, they're going to take out the work power of a human being, which is kind of the robotic movement. It is scary. It's kind of a scary picture, but it's happening and it's out there. Future entertainment, such as the light show that we saw, verifying insurance claims. And I thought maybe at this point, Mark tell us like what your drones see. What are they doing when they're up on the buildings?
Sure. No. I appreciate this form. So at least as it pertains to Eagle Hawk in the Southeast, not necessarily up in Buffalo, New York, out of which we're based, but in the Southeast, a lot of our business tends to be roof inspections. So we're coming over and we're flying drones at a certain height above the roofs, sometimes in a lawnmower type pattern, and we're taking photographic evidence of the roof. And then we're coming back two times during the day with our infrared camera. And the infrared camera, basically, it just sees heat. So we're looking over the roofs for those areas that are retaining more heat than others. This isn't radiology. You don't need to have a deep understanding of all the materials involved. You just have to have an understanding from a thermography standpoint of which materials have a higher degree of what's called thermal retention. But as it pertains to the unit owners and it pertains to the condo associations, these are the services that are most often employed, not only by Eagle Hawk, but by most drone-enabled data providers that are working in this space. We will also, in the power line survey industry, we'll fly along power lines, we'll fly along gas lines, we'll look for cracks, we'll use 30x zoom, we'll do a lot more than condo associations would ever employ us to do. But on occasion, and this is where it becomes very, very important, and I cannot stress enough how important the relationship is between you, the CAM, possibly the property management company, and your drone-enabled service provider, because drones can be dangerous, most often not, but as long as you're expecting Joe to come out and Joe comes out and you have a relationship with Joe and you see Joe flying the drone, you know you're good. If you have a vertical facade that's being surveyed, now, okay, yes, there will be a drone that will be coming up near some unit owners. It will be buzzing quite loudly. That's one thing drones are not. Drones are not unobtrusive. Drones make a lot of noise for the now. So you always know when one is hovering because it sounds like 40 hornet's nests going off. But the point I'm trying to bring up is in those specific instances, we know with surgical precision where we're going to be flying. And we'll give notice to property management companies or condo associations to say, hey, we're going to be on the south facade. We're going to be on the south facade between 6 p.m. and 6:30 p.m. We'll be coming back tomorrow morning between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m. so that we're giving the residents as much data and understanding of who's coming out, what the company does, when they're going to be flying, so that there are no surprises. It's the entities that come up and say, hey, I can do your roof survey, and maybe tomorrow they come by, oh, we already got the data. We're good. Thanks. These are the entities you need to be very, very weary of. So in a nutshell, I hope that answered the question.
Absolutely. And I think our camp forum is a great place where if you've had that type of entity and you've had dealings with them and they never showed up, they weren't on time, this is where we're going to talk about it and say, okay, you know, these people weren't professional. They didn't provide us notice. Our owners didn't know. Those are the types of things, you know, we need to be talking about in camp to make sure that we're protecting one another, because that's why we're getting together, so that we can collaborate, talk about, disagree about things. I mean, that's one of the things that's really important about this organization, for us to get together and really, you know, debate some of these things, because we all have different feelings about drones, and obviously Seth is super against them. and Rick is super pro, and that's okay.
Just one quick thing that I forgot.
Not to mention, and possibly targeted to Seth, one thing that I think we on the Space Coast have going for us that we may not realize is to our north is Canaveral, and just a little bit to our south is Patrick. And a lot of our condo associations actually that we've serviced are in restricted airspace. So your companies will need to have a relationship with the FAA and the towers of these various places to make sure that we are authorized to fly. And the thing that protects you is a Patrick, especially a Patrick, because I know the Patrick people better than the Canaveral people. But the Patrick people are flying the radar, and if they see a bzzz and they don't know about it, they will respond. That's a very good thing. That's a very good thing. I mean, for East Horizon and other groups that are really in close proximity to these Air Force stations, they will be on it, and that's a very good
MPs
thing.
MPs come down to the beach just because of a recreational drone.
Good.
Okay, a recreational drone went up and was whizzing behind the backs of the condos, and I just went like this to look at my watch, and I said, I give him 5 minutes. With that, two of the small, of the ATVs come flying down the thing with MPs.
Oh, gosh.
They grabbed the drone, they grabbed the kids, threw them in the back of the ATP and took them back to Texas.
That's bad.
The kid was only, he looked like about 16, 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but we also had one in Cocoa, where the kid was flying it from the parking lot across the street from the condo, and it crept and landed on one of the balconies of the condo. The kids came on the property and climbed up the back of the condo.
Oh my God.
Balcony to balcony to balcony to get up to get his drone. When he got to the balcony where it was, he was met with a 32 automatic. And the guy told him, he said, just sit right down. He called the sheriff and told the sheriff to come and get him and the drone. But this does happen. And this is real time news. You know, and it's one of our associations, and we laugh about it now, but it wasn't funny at the time.
Oh, that's very scary.
Worry about terrorism and everything else, mm-hmm. and all these things.
Right. You know, I mean, you got to remember, most people in Florida carry guns. You know, and unfortunately, a lot of them don't know how to use them. They don't have the common sense behind it.
Oof. Any other questions? Go ahead, Karen.
So you were saying you do associations around here, you have done associations?
Oh yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so being said that, do any of the homeowners ever complain about you being there?
Well, Lynn, Rick.
Absolutely not.
Hopefully not.
I utilized the services and they gave enough notice to myself to then turn around and notify all the owners. And that was with postings and emails. And absolutely not. I had no homeowners. I mean, and they came out, I think, four times to fly because it was different times of the day, morning,
right.
Afternoon, night. I think one of them was actually on a weekend as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. We didn't like the results, so we came back.
Yeah. Various, but the notification was wonderful. And I didn't have any homeowners questions because we were able to notify them.
My utilization's a little different. He's actually, and I have HOAs also.
Yeah.
And with your experience, I have the same. They do a morning, early morning, and an evening flight, and it's well noticed. And it's well received. I might have had one owner that was concerned because she heard the negativity of the media on the drones. But once she was met and actually talked to the team, they enjoyed the education of it. One thing that benefited the associations, and I've had three, we found leaks, confirmed leaks, that they had been fighting, and they've been resolved now, which is a blessing. The other is an HOA that they're actually trying to find why there's an erosion problem to a bank. And the reports have been beneficial. I think you could probably say the same. The reporting is just so detailed and amazing.
Thank you.
Very cool. Thank you.
Appreciate
it. It was definitely worth it. I mean, as far as the condos, we were in the same boat. We were fighting roofs that were leaking. And to get a board to understand that the roof is leaking and we have to spend money to fix it was impossible. Brought them out, they flew it, and the board all of a sudden said, oh, okay, now I see, now I understand. And the roof got fixed right away.
Thank you. Appreciate that very, very much.
Any other questions? Comments?
But I can tell you, I have talked to other drone companies, and I wouldn't hire them. Just because of the professionalism, and they don't have a relationship that some of their people have.
No, I'm getting like emotional. This is great. Thank you. Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that many. You don't realize it until all of a sudden Facebook gets pulled up. And then all of a sudden there's a ton of drone people on Facebook. That's offering that.
My maintenance guy bought one for his son. And he was like, listen, don't go very high, don't go very high. Well, his son was like, he's 15. So he took it and he flew it up and the wind took it. Hasn't seen it since.
It's kind of like that fairy in the fireplace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How big are they? Like, how big are they? They come from that little size to that size.
How much does that weigh?
So this would weigh roughly 14 pounds, 15 pounds. And this will be the type of drone that we can use in majority in the Southeast. But there are much larger drones that we have and we deploy for different reasons. But this is, you know, kind of like a 20-inch by 20-inch.
But is that light? How's the wind taken? Don't see heavier to keep the wind.
Oh, quick, quick pause on Jay. I'll come back to Jay. Liz, I'm sorry.
With the winds we have in Florida, I'm just curious.
Not a worry.
It's fine.
Okay. These motors, these servo motors, are so powerful that they can hold a position sometimes plus or minus 11 inches in all axes in like a 30 mile per hour wind. With a very skilled pilot, it obviously gets a lot better, but the technology is advancing so, so rapidly that it can compensate automatically, depending on what mode you're flying in, for those type of forces acting upon it. The actual pilot will never be able to do, I think, what sometimes the computers can do to compensate. So they're safe. The commercial grade drones, they're actually very, very safe. They can be.
Could that be hurricane future? To go into flight hurricanes?
Well, again, because I'm an engineer, I always look upon the surface area and the wind acting upon the surface area and the resultant force, and being able to overcome that with propeller and prop speed, you would need magnets that would weigh like 50 pounds. I mean, it would be unbelievable.
And I think the Amazon delivery, they can only hold up to 8 pounds.
Was it 5 pounds? 5 pounds, yeah. So, I mean, they really, right now, and I think those drones are even bigger than that, the ones that can carry.
Some are.
Yeah. I think they're, what was it, up to 65 pounds that the drones can be under the Section 333?
55 pounds, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Correct.
I have a question on yeah. this. If this would
then I'll go back to Jay. Yeah.
You right. I had the same question.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Okay, so first Rick and then Jay. I'm sorry. Oh, you're good. Oh, okay, never mind.
If this would hit a Dade County, a slider that's Dade County, would that even do anything to any damage? I mean, honestly, if it's coming in at an average speed.
A slider.
A hurricane rated slider. Would it even do anything?
Oh, okay, because slider is a tiny cheeseburger to me. Okay, so. It would decimate that cheeseburger. No, I'm kidding.
I'm being serious.
It would do. It's hard for me to say. I mean, one thing that, you know, maybe Jim can comment on. I mean, if we do impact testing with drones based off of the power in the motors versus the materials used against the sliders, I would have to say the sliders win. But if you hit it at the right angle in between the seam,
when the biggest damage is huge. I've seen people where. Landing, people will get very protective of the camera, you know, high-end camera, and go and get it. They realize your high speed the propellers, so that'll put a good, you know, gash in your hand. But I agree with you. I think the sliding glass door, especially with the hurricane-resistant one, will do more damage to the drone than the drone will do to you.
Yeah, because it's composite and plastic, most of it.
And it's not flying. It's not flying at a lot of speed, so there's not a lot of kinetic energy behind it.
Yeah.
It's one thing if it's flying at 40, 50 knots, but that's not how these aircraft are employed. They're at slow speed, hovering essentially. And
that's a lot of money to throw out the window because they ran into a glass lighting.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm thinking of what could happen. I mean, as far as hitting a person or hitting something on the balcony and, you know, it being thrown into a balcony. Okay. I'm just trying to look at the insurance pack of that in my mind.
Well, another thing, and Trevor knows, on our drones, they have an avoidance detection. I can fly at 20 miles an hour to building, it'll dead stop before it hits the building. So there's a lot of technology advances that are protecting things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
very cool.
Judy?
Was there somebody behind that Amazon drone running that drone to send it to that GPS. Farmer?
No, I'm glad you brought that up. That.
What if it comes down on the family cat or something like that?
Well, notice in the video, two things I'll point out. So in that particular video, it was in England, it was in rural England, and the laws that govern England are different from the laws that govern the United States. That was a fully autonomous pilotage. And you saw the ultra dangerous races happen in where else but Dubai, where there doesn't seem to be any amount of regulation for anything. This would, I would argue that it would take a long, long time with lots and lots of litigation behind it, before which time we'd be able to see that 100% in the United States. However, and I love the business model, Amazon will likely have their leading edge in the United States be pharmaceutical deliveries, because they're high profit and they're low weight. Right. So if you are someone who needs their drugs and you need them fast and you need them often, if you live in, I don't know, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma, or somewhere rural, that is going to be an optimal solution for you, because the risk is going to be lessened by virtue of the payload being so light. But the profit margins on pharmaceuticals are so high, that's going to be the first place you're going to see infiltrated in the United States.
Well, I think we're happy to stick around and answer any other questions. Please eat more food, drink more wine and beer. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you could do us a huge favor and rate and subscribe, you can do it right in your iTunes app. Please shoot us an email if you have questions or topics, anything that we could help you with. Campcontact@gmail.com, C-A-A-M-P, contact@gmail.com. Thanks, and we'll catch up with you next week.